Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Panos Katsambas. I'm a partner with Reed Smith, advising hedge funds and private equity funds in connection with transactions in a number of areas and shipping in particular. When we started this panel a few years ago, the focus of discussion was alternative investors, private equity forming joint ventures with shipping groups and investing equity primarily to take advantage of the cyclicality of the shipping market of what appeared at the time to be at its bottom. Today, I think with the shipping banks retreating from the market, private equity participants participates in a number of different ways, making outright investments, providing alternative options to ship owners to raise capital, either to refinance existing indebtedness or make new counter-cyclical investments, whether through traditional debt, mezzanine debt structures, sale and leaseback financing, equity, synthetic or straight, or a number of different other options. We will explore the current trends that touch on all these types of investments together with our panelists. And to start, I would like to ask each of them to introduce themselves and provide a bit of a general comment in the current trends that they see in the market and how they position their respective organization to take advantage. Anders?
So Anders Meyerhoff, I work at Apax, which is a large global private equity firm headquartered here in London. Help cover shipping globally. I think the three key themes that I touch on, a little bit different perspective. Number one, our customers, institutional investors, large governments, sovereign wealth funds are really on a hunt for yield right now. And what that means is that there's a massive amount of dry powder out there. People are getting further out on risk curves. What that means, I think, is that the market itself is going to be getting incrementally better over the next few years for alternative capital. Realize that banks are in a different place, but that capital is moving to alternative assets, which should be better for the lower parts of the capital structure. Moving to fundamental themes, number one, I think the underlying core trends are actually quite strong. What you see is seaborne trade across markets, across industries, generally growing, and despite my president's best efforts, globalization is really only moving one way. Don't see that changing anytime soon. And so from our perspective, we're trying to invest in companies that actually improve cost and efficiency given the pressure that's happening in the spot markets. And so companies with real scale who are doing things at lower prices with better quality and providing those capabilities to customers is really where we see attractiveness over the next 10, 15 years.
Andreas Paulsen, Breakwater Capital. We are specifically focused on shipping and offshore, and I think we've talked about that here before as well. General trends, we try not to be too focused on the general trends and not be too trendy. I think that if you listen to some of the panels here earlier today, certainly one trend that is pretty clear is the traditional banks still exiting the space. It seemed like there were five representatives of ICBC Leasing at the panel earlier and not one, all of them pitching the leasing model. So leasing is clearly something that has filled some of the gap in funding in the markets. I think the other thing, as Anders is saying, clearly the global markets are awash with cash. Investors are chasing yield. And that means that despite the fact that a lot of people and a lot of investors probably don't really like shipping or offshore particularly, they, based on having very few other alternatives that gives them the needed returns, have kind of come back to shipping. We feel that a lot of the investors that are looking at shipping are almost every time they come back thinking that they're going to get outsized returns, hitting out of the ballpark, and therefore potentially taking risk that isn't necessarily the best risk-weighted returns and what shipping actually can offer. The other thing that I think is a little bit, you know, unfortunate and reason why many investors probably don't like shipping particularly much is that a lot of the retail investors have again and again been hit by dubious governance and ways of conducting themselves for many of the public market, publicly listed companies, or even some of the bonds that have been listed. So I would say generally, unfortunately, for a lot of the smaller investors, access to the shipping markets is difficult, or at least if they do get access, it isn't necessarily always where you would necessarily see the top performers.
Hi, Andy Dacey. Run capital for JP Morgan that invests in the shipping space as well as in the broader transportation space. I think now when we look at the markets, I think some parts of shipping hasn't changed. You can sort of take the dual-pronged approach where if you want to be an asset player, there's plenty of opportunities to do that. If you want to try to pursue yield, then that's something that, as my colleagues have mentioned, I think is very much in vogue. I think shipping by nature, though, if you are going short-term on the charter side of things, you don't necessarily have a lot of certainty on that yield, so that's something that needs to be balanced. The one thing, too, I'll mention is that even though shipping is something that provides the potential for outsized yield, and even though investors do have a lot of capital, I do think that crossing that bridge between having the capital and getting into shipping is often a complicated one, and that some of shipping's colorful past, unfortunately, prevents that bridge from being easily crossed. So I think there is impediment, which is probably good for those of us that are investing in this space, because you don't want too much capital, because that tends to upset the party and make things a little bit unpleasant. And I think the banks leaving, which, again, I'm echoing what's been said, but that, I would say, is a good thing. When you see new orders, which have picked up a little bit, unfortunately, in the dry cargo space, but the orders are not for four or six sets of ships. You see more two or one. I think there's a lot of uncertainty about whether or not the capital is going to be there to finance future orders from a debt perspective. And so owners are a lot more cautious with their equity and not looking to commit a lot of it up front with the uncertainty of whether the debt capital is going to be there. So there's some positive, I think these are all positive factors for investing in shipping, and you have to do it carefully. And I would say the opportunity has been, whether it's still there or not, is a question on the dry cargo space. I think the tanker market's got some issues. I think there's a lot of questions around dislocation in the future. We've all heard Volkswagen and other companies. Now China is going to try to make its entire auto fleet exclusively electric. So what are the impacts of that on the future of the tanker business? So I think words of caution are worthwhile, and that's pretty much always been the case in shipping.
Paulo Almeida from Tufton Oceanic. As with Andreas and Andy's team at JP Morgan, we focus almost exclusively on shipping, also offshore energy to some extent, but not currently. It wouldn't be right if I wouldn't extend a little bit what's already been said about banks leaving the market. None of us have anything against commercial banks, not at all. They're quite helpful in a lot of deals, but lower volumes going into shipping, lower capital is obviously a good thing. What I would add to that is what we've also started seeing over the past perhaps 2 years, but it's been accelerating and we expect to accelerate further, is a reduction in shipyard capacity, which is very important for the long-term health of the industry. We feel, as Andreas and Andy and also Anders pointed out, the outsized returns are unlikely to be there. We as Tufton think that shipping is much better positioned as an illiquid or largely illiquid moderate risk, moderate return business. And if there isn't a lot of capital flowing into the industry, that's what it's likely to be, much more akin to how some other capital intensive industries like aviation and real estate finance themselves most of the time.
Thank you. All. Touching on the issue of the banks retreating the market, and I wanted to ask, starting with you, Andreas, perhaps, is alternative capital in a position to fill the financing gap on the credit side in the shipping market?
Well, and again, you know, we have of course had some of these topics up before at this conference, and I think alternative capital is a broad spectrum of different type of investors. We really like to, again, as we talked about earlier, about some of the kind of hot money coming in, whether that is on the equity side or it's on the debt side, as Andy mentioned as well, that right now you do have this kind of focus on, maybe we can go in and lend money, or we can buy into bonds or whatever it is. I mean, you've kind of seen again now a few things getting off the ground in Norway. Again, you can always argue the underlying structure and the governance and stuff like that. But the huge difference is really, what is it that alternative capital is trying to do? From our own perspective, we are a finance platform that has done substantial business that is there not just because of one distressed opportunity or one structured opportunity. We're there to lend to owners who find themselves in a situation where either because of the market or because of the bank's retrenching are no longer able to get that bank financing they were used to in the past. And that is where we, over the last couple of years, have been very active, committed more than $1 billion. And even though that it wasn't necessarily countercyclical per se, we tried to lend on all asset classes. But what really depends on when and how we do it is what kind of leverage, what kind of structure and so forth can you do at the different times. So last year, February, March, when the market was the grimmest on the dry bulk side, that's actually where we were very active on the dry bulk side in lending. And a lot of the companies out there were not able to get financing from traditional banks. We were able to extend structures that tried to mitigate the cash burn risk and therefore had an initial 18 months cash sweep only rather than fixed amortization, which was a big part of it. But we certainly, based on our fairly detailed analysis of it, felt that through the cycle with patient capital, and this is again the big point, that if you don't have the right capital, I just don't think you really should be wasting your time in shipping. And that is, of course, an issue if you suddenly have capital calls and stuff like that and need to trade in and out. It's, of course, why you see some bonds getting done, because smaller money can come in and do a little chunk of a deal and they believe they're going to be trading in and out of it. But if you talk about substantial money that can help bridge the gap, and that's what the question is, you need more people like what we are doing today that really creates proper platforms where the owners know they can go again and again. The money is already there. It doesn't need to go out and be raised. And you know that whether you have a tanker or a bulker or whatever, depending on the structure and whether you are realistic, there is something that can get done. And I think that really is the key to it. I think the money that has really bridged the big part of the gap so far has been Chinese leasing money, export credit agencies, and so forth that are taking the big vessels, the big chunks. But again, like we talked about before, it's still the same money that's going towards the same clients. Generally, the better credits, even though one could clearly argue that many of the leasing structures that are getting done should probably have a bit more focused on the credit, and it's amazing how they price those deals. But generally, it's the same money that's going towards the same clients, and you have a huge underserviced remaining market where, again, ourselves, maybe one or two other players are really doing the deals with the borrowers, but you definitely need a lot more players to really fulfill that market.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that that's where I was focusing, to the extent that you can see different type of alternative capital providers, whether it's private equity or new platforms being set up in the space, fill that void by doing dead deals that are creative and substitute the banks, let's say.
Yeah, and I think, again, many of the owners, it's not necessarily creative that they're looking for. They're looking for somebody that can step in. And, again, many of these owners, unfortunately, have found themselves in a position where the relationship bank they had banked with for 20, 30 years suddenly sold out part of the portfolio to more or less aggressive investors, and they need to deal with that. So, unfortunately, the world has changed. Pricing is not the same as it was before. I think for investors that are trying to do an asset play, they need a bridge financing, they need short-term money, and strongly believe that the assets are going to double in a couple of years. Yeah, some of the hot money that comes in and offers 12, 13, 14% margins, okay, maybe that still does work. But generally, if you're talking about the business surviving and having a viable capital structure or capital stack, yeah, you need other players that can provide lower cost capital still. And this is, again, my problem that I said from the beginning. Many of the people that seems to want to invest in shipping, they want to invest in distress or stuff that really is able to give very high returns.
Maybe I'll just jump in.
Yeah, before you jump in, I want to address also another parameter of this and comment on what you want on Andreas's points, but also how does the lack of credit and sort of the how does the exit of the shipping banks affect your decision making in the investments you're making and how you assess the opportunities? So perhaps you can.
On that one, it generally makes me happier. Again, I have nothing against commercial banks, but I think that the ones that are still active are doing the right thing, if I may be so humble as to say that. And I think the survivors realize that good credits, good owners, good assets, these are all the key factors that lead to success, and that will be the definition of success for those that ever stayed in. Others, through circumstances and perhaps bad decisions, had to leave. And maybe I'll circle back around to that, but just on what Andreas was saying and just about private equity bridging the gap or becoming a new alternative source of capital, I think one of the other good things as well is that most private equity is looking for quite high returns. usually hurt terms that are much higher than shipping can provide. And again, as we said, there's the odd distress situation that'll give you a very good return. And those are sort of once in a blue moon type things, I believe, at least. And if you think you're going to find those all the time in shipping, then I think, as Benjamin Franklin once said, experience is a tough teacher, but fools will learn from no other. But getting back to capital that's in that 9 to 10% range, there's a lot of alternatives out there to get 9 to 10% returns. You can invest in real estate, you can invest in infrastructure, and these are much deeper, broader markets that are much more historically proven. And the risk, arguably, for a core piece of real estate that can generate 6 to 7% returns is probably a lot less than what you would get in investing in shipping. So I think this is a good thing, because I think that 6 to 10% money, it'll come into shipping, and there'll certainly be people that understand the market and can work with those capital sources to be a conduit, much like what Andreas is doing. But I think broad influx of capital from the institutional investor market into a 6 to 10% type of return lending market, I think that's very unlikely. And if you're out there as a ship owner borrowing at 13 or 14%, that's going to kill your business, because that's sort of a good equity return if you're lucky in shipping. So if you're paying the debt that, you're not going to have anything left for the equity. So I think these are good things, in the sense that, at least our hope is that you won't see this flood of capital coming in. And I think that will result in more prudence and a more balanced approach to funding this industry.
Thank you. Switching gears a bit, and Paolo, in terms of new investments, how does, exiting prior private equity deals in the space by you or by other competitors, the difficulty of exiting, how does that affect your current thinking, both in terms of new investments and potentially for exit strategy of prior investments in sort of the near and midterm horizon?
Sure. Well, for I want to just, in partially answering your question, Pano, I want to go back to what I said earlier, and that we as a firm believe that significant illiquidity in shipping is probably a good thing. About 90% of the capital that we've invested over the past 6 or 7 years doesn't really need an exit. They're in structures that are legally set up to be 10 to 12 years, which is roughly half the economic life of a vessel. So if we're buying vessels that are mostly 10 to 12 years old, then we really don't need an exit. And that's by design. One of the attractive things we think in shipping, and that could increase, is that actually as a shipping investor, you can actually earn the illiquidity premium that you should be earning, rather than thinking about shipping as a very high return asset that you buy at distressed and 2 or 3 years later you exit through an IPO. I don't think there are many people who believe in IPO exits anymore. So we actually believe that illiquidity is a good thing. So if the fleet is turning over 3 to 5% per year, that's enough that it looks a little bit more like a long-term real estate market, and the whole industry will just act in a much more constrained way, as we've talked about.
Okay. Anders, looking at the market today, where do you see the biggest opportunities for you, and what is it that, in terms of current trends that would let you invest now vis-a-vis, not having invested perhaps in the last few years as others did?
Yeah, I think as all these guys have pointed out, private equity is an expensive source of capital, and hot money, if you want to call it that, coming in and owning steel and looking for 20% returns is a great way to lose money. And so that's really not what we're after these days. I think we're trying to look around corners and own asset-light businesses that really facilitate the global shipping industry. Those, we see a few very disruptive business models that people are coming up with that really capitalize on some of the global themes, but without actually taking the real spot market risk, which is where we see other people having really got it wrong in the past. And so from our perspective, as very long-term, patient, but big and expensive capital we are trying to look at disruptive models, kind of around thinking around corners, trying to do things a little bit differently. And what that means, we have to be very patient in where we deploy capital, just picking the right situations. And so although we've earmarked over the last year or two about $500 million of equity to deploy, we're still sitting on that, looking for just those right pieces. We think anyone can really write checks these days, and you're seeing that. It's writing those checks intelligently that's really the trick, and that's what we're looking for right now.
And just as a follow-up to that, do you see an opportunity to spearhead the consolidation in the market that we've talked about in many of these conferences? Is there a role for private equity to play in that context?
Absolutely. The short answer is we're trying. And just like anyone can write a check, anyone can smash together a couple of businesses. The trick is to be able to do that where it makes commercial sense. And you know, in general, consolidation can take any number of permutations, whether it's across geographies, whether it's vertically looking in different service models. Consolidation can be thoughtful, and really, again, thinking of a few years out, it's going to take a few different routes, but we want to try and facilitate that, but again, do it only where customers are demanding it, as opposed to trying to do it just to save a few bucks.
Paolo, would you like to comment on that, if you see opportunities in the consolidation in the market?
For one, private equity getting involved in the industry, even to a smaller extent than it wasn't involved 3 or 4 years ago, is by definition already going to lead to some consolidation, because we're private equity companies are largely picking up assets that used to be owned by single ship KGs, for example, and other small and medium sized companies or sort of orphan companies, etc. So most of what is being acquired. Not all, but most of what's being acquired by definition is already consolidating the market. I agree with Anders as well that private equity can be a good catalyst for consolidation. However, all of us that perhaps have been in shipping a little bit longer have experienced that consolidation is also very difficult in an industry that has... not uniquely. You see the same thing in energy. You see the same thing in real estate. There are a lot of large egos, and getting consolidation to happen can be quite difficult. It doesn't take just private equity. I think it takes pretty poor market conditions, which we've seen for a lot of the past 7 or 8 years. It takes public capital as well, pushing public companies to get together, such as the Scorpio Navigate product deal, which maybe was obvious to a lot of people, but took a long time for it to actually happen. And probably commercial banks as well, who have interests in multiple large or medium-sized, but quite solid companies in the same industry to get together. Just look at how long it's taken the Japanese container lines to merge their activities, although it's not a pure merger exactly, but that's been staring them in the face. I'm sure investment bankers have been pitching that for the past 30 years, and it's taken pretty extreme market conditions for that finally to happen.
I just add to that. I actually think that you have seen a bit of a change, and yes, there are clearly still personalities that and egos that want to control their own fiefdom and stuff like that, but I think there's a couple of different types of consolidation. I think the banks are a pretty key part of this. I think the fact that the banks now have taken a lot of the necessary write-offs and therefore are selling off debt, you have new players that are coming in and controlling some of that debt. Plus, again, I think transactions that were already mentioned on the product tanker side, yeah, it seems like that was done out of necessity. Somebody would have a hard time continuing in the current setup, and therefore others had to step in, maybe helped a little bit on the way by the banks of doing so. And you've seen the same in dry bulk. I think, as was mentioned, a lot of the one single ship deals have been picked up and consolidated into setups of maybe 10, 20 ships. But the next step could very well be that they also will be consolidated into some of the bigger public companies. So clearly you've seen changes in management in some of these companies. You've seen bigger mergers. You've seen the whole discussion around Frontline and the companies around there on mergers in the crude side. And I think dry bulk, again, discuss half full, half empty or whatever, but certainly coming out of a very, very severe crisis, Now, next step seems to be kind of consolidation based on maybe more positives and growth. And I think tankers are probably in the opposite position right now, where some players in crude and in product need to do it out of necessity.
Yeah, probably healthier if it materializes that way. Before asking the audience for any questions, Andy, one comment from you in terms of the capital markets, and we heard that currently it's difficult to exit through the capital markets. There have been some examples where things didn't turn out quite well for retail investors. What is, in your view, the biggest obstacle today for those markets to reopen? Is it the industry conditions? Is it the governance changes that need to happen in some of the companies that are listed?
I think probably those are two pretty key points. I would say that some of the bad behavior of some of the public companies has not done the industry any good. Markets probably are more important because we've also seen that as long as companies are making money, people are willing to overlook bad behavior. But when you're not doing either very well, then that's probably a pretty bad combination. I also think the shipping industry has been plagued with the fact that the companies are just too small. I mean, the average sized market cap of a public shipping company trading on the New York or NASDAQ is stock exchanges, $200-300 million, probably even less now, given what's happened in the marketplace. So that just doesn't get investors that excited. And, you know, the whole story of we got the best OPEX and, you know, we make whatever, we spend $5,000 and the guy next door spends $5,100 to run a Kamsarmax, I think that kind of gets old after a while. And how many times can you sort of try to explain that fact when really at the end of the day, this is a very commoditized business. So to Anders's point, if you're just dealing in steel, then you really do need to consolidate. And I think that's where some of the existing public companies probably are best suited to do that, to get bigger. Because once they get bigger, then hopefully governance is better and they get more capital because they are bigger. And so you're not stuck in a small market cap company and you can trade in and out. I think that's probably going to be the future. And just on the consolidation, my personal opinion is that it's all about the commercial banks. If you look at the industry, it is pretty lopsided. I think the statistic is that something like there's only about 150 companies globally that have over 25 ships. Some, of course, have a bit more. But you really get into the vast majority of the industry being in that sub-20 ship category. So what is the attitude of a commercial bank towards lending to a smaller company? And I think that's radically changing. So, private equity will move the needle a little bit, but we're not going to move it as much as, I would say, the debt providers will at the end of the day.
But I still would add again, I think actually for a well-structured deal with quality sponsors, management, the right assets, I think the markets may actually be open. And Norway has certainly benefited from that, as in, you see Tor of Trondheim, a very good example with Borr Drilling. Not only did he manage to in a distressed situation, people, again, coming a little bit back to distress, take over a number of jack-up rigs and get people to invest in that. But he's actually been able to grow that further and bring in Transocean's rigs. Pretty fantastic outcome in a very, very short space of time. Substantial money that was raised, maybe not in New York, but eventually ending up on the Norwegian listing. And John Fredriksen has done the same with Northern Drilling. So there are examples. You've had Songa, you've had MPC, you've had, it's been Norway, and Norway is easier because it's faster and for a number of other different reasons. Of course, the proof is in the pudding, whether that will go to a bigger exchange and have a bigger buy-in. But again, I just think that, there's just been too much of the same or stuff that really isn't very exciting to invest in.
Yeah, Paolo?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, I obviously agree with what Andreas said, that very good sponsors can raise money in deals, although it has typically been in Norway. The big difference with these deals, however, I think, is that in all of these deals, we're basically raising new money to acquire distressed assets or cheap assets, but where the sponsor was putting in a lot of money, whereas the typical shipping IPO was structured quite badly in a lot of ways, in that the sponsor is taking out a lot of money. And I think that's probably the key to success, is having a good sponsor, not only with track record, but actually putting in new money and not taking money out. And that's the right way to do things.
I mean, I think those deals wouldn't have gotten done without Tor Olav being behind that, and frankly, Herman and Axel being behind the other one.
If you can hold your appetite a bit longer, see if we have any questions from the audience. I think we have a microphone for the... It's...
Good morning. My name is Mariella Bottiglieri. I'm an Italian ship owner. I think that the problem is the timeline. And I'll explain you what I mean. I am the sixth generation of the family in the company. And my aim is to give, if I'm able to, the company to the seventh generation. Why the timeline is the problem? I'll explain you with a colorful but effective expression. A traditional family-based ship owner is like a woman who wants to get married forever. The bank used to be the perfect guy, but we all know that the bank walked away. So we're left with the private equity fund.
The volatile guy, right?
The private equity fund wants to marry me or wants a one-night stand. Because the problem is this. A vessel is like 20 years life investment. Hence the question, to make it work, how long as an average do you stay in an investment in shipping? When do you want to exit? Thanks.
Well, I have to say that private equity...
I can just answer that right away. Of course, a great opportunity to talk dating and things like that. But actually, it was exactly the point that I was trying to make, that I can't speak for other investors, but the way we're looking at it is that we are a financial platform that provides five-year loans to ship owners. It's not our decision when you exit as an owner in that loan structure or not. So it's very different than a private equity investment in a structural way. But the documents, everything else, would be very similar to what you're seeing from your old husband or whoever you were with in the past. And we basically want to continue to do deals with the owners that we're dealing with. And we have already done repeat deals with people that we have lent to. So we're definitely trying to be long-term, but the warning and what I mentioned earlier is there are clearly a lot of other people out there who doesn't necessarily either put the money or the resources into building up a structure that analyzes the assets, the shipping markets, everything else to be in a position to commit long-term.
Anders, would you like to also comment from the standpoint of the life term of a fund and how that plays into the equation?
Yeah, and to be clear, I think all of our investors demand returns not over 50 years, over 5, 6, 7 year time frames. That being said, it is a relationship sort of game. And so although we try to demonstrate returns to our investors over shorter time frames, these things are repeat games. They play out over 20, 30, 40 years. And so helping people accomplish what they want to accomplish over the near term, but then developing that into long-term relationships that accomplish broader goals is really what we're supposed to do. And so although we try to demonstrate returns quickly to our investors, it's not something where you come in, hang out for 3 years, and ride off into the sunset like a one-night stand. The relationships are meant to be mutually beneficial for everybody over a really long term.
I would add that we're more like monks. We don't really get into relationships anymore. We just buy the assets, run them ourselves, and have given up on the joint venture partner approach.
And Tufton is fairly similar to that as well. Although we do sale leasebacks, which are somewhere in between, and those go up to 10 years. So those are quite long term.
If we have time for one more question, then we can wrap it up. It's at the back.
Very good. Good afternoon. My name is Mark Charman. I'm the CEO of the Faststream Group. So, as part of London Shipping Week, we did a survey of senior shipping executives, some 3,000 executives, and we asked them, what was the most important thing? What was the one thing that stood out in the DNA of an executive in the shipping sector in our turbulent times? And everyone said resilience. What is it that investors look for from their senior leadership team? What's the one thing that investors are looking for from the people behind the business that they invest in?
Maybe I can go first. I think for us, it's vision. Said quite simply, you know, this industry goes through cycles. This industry has tough times. It has good times. Thinking about where it needs to go over the long term, making those investments, being patient, being thoughtful and strategic for us is by far the most important.
Moral ethics, the lending structure, whatever, doesn't always go as planned, and therefore it's extremely important for both parties that they can sit down at the table and trust each other and find a solution to that problem. So quite critical.
I would say prudence and realism, not expecting things that probably won't happen and being prudent as you put the money to work.
Prudence is a good one, but just so we can all say something different, I'll say alignment. You hear this all the time in private equity, but we should only, as investment managers, do really well if our investors do really well.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Enjoy the lunch and the rest of the conference.